Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Barrel-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Barrel, and today our guest is Jeff Woser, writer, comedian, and speaker. And today we're discussing digital distractions. Welcome, Jeff. Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you very much, Tawny. I am honored to be here.
Well, I am very much looking forward to this discussion, but it's funny because a part of me felt as though I just cussed on air, almost like we're talking about this elephant in the room, and how dare you and I are considering having this discussion. The thing is it's all around us. And in fact, I should recognize that there is a very good chance that we have listeners right now who are listening to the show and are simultaneously doing other things, and that we, in fact, are that digital distraction. Dun, dun, dun. Does it feel like I just cursed again, Jeff?
Yes, it does.
Here's the advice. Here's the advice I have for those individuals. So if you are listening to us right now and you are multitasking, put everything else down and focus just on Jeff and I for the next hour. That's how we're going to solve that problem. Right, Jeff?
Exactly. Because studies show multitasking is not effective at all. So yes, put it down and just listen to us and you'll get so much more out of this.
Perfect. So Jeff, you know, as I said before, welcome. I'm excited for this topic. If people couldn't tell just by the way that we opened up, it's going to be an interesting hour. And I'm looking forward to the discussion, but I'm sure a lot of people are saying, who's this Jeff guy, Tawny, and why are you talking to him? So why don't you share a little bit about yourself so that we can give listeners a little background as to why you and I are talking about this important subject?
Okay. I'm a comedian turned speaker who goes around the country talking about digital distraction. And how I got into this topic is when I became a stand-up comedian. As a comedian, you have the only benefit you have is time. We don't have retirement. We don't have insurance. We only have time because basically your workday is about an hour long. Unless you, depending on the venue, you might have to do a radio or a TV interview in the morning, but pretty much the time is yours. And so with all this free time, I decided to put my free time to use and began freelance writing for magazines, writing humor articles, mainly humor articles on outdoor recreation, project management, for restaurant reviews, whatever. And if anyone's out there listening, if you ever get an article published, and then it kind of opens the door to other magazines contacting you. So all of a sudden I began, while I was touring on the comedy road, I began writing for all different magazines, and it was the perfect marriage with comedy because I could write from the road. I could type anywhere. I didn't have to report in an office. And I liked the extra money. So then I started to get greedy and I began doing online work. You know, when everyone's saying content is king, and suddenly I had clients all over the world, in Australia and France and India, and it was great. It still allowed me to tour on the comedy road, but I was spending more and more time on my computer. I didn't think a whole lot about it. And then one day I had a friend say there was a new website. Was called dmv.org. And yes, it's as boring as it sounds, yet it had a ton of work. And I could work 40, 50, 60 hours a week at any time, and it paid well. And at one point, this website was the 37th most visited.org site in the world. So it was doing very well. And I began spending a lot of time on that, but it was very shallow work. By shallow, I meant, you know, I might fix some links, might type in some data, might write a quick blurb or two, and then also I check email. Then I would check sports. Then I would check news. And I conditioned my brain for distraction. I didn't think a whole lot of it. And then one day I began missing my writing deadlines. And then I missed another writing deadline and then another. And it never happened before. And I was always very punctual, making sure I always got my deadlines, my writing assignments in on time, and suddenly began missing them. And what was frustrating about it, it was that not because I did not want to write, it was because I could not write. I no longer had the mental stamina, the focus needed for writing. And it was very frustrating. And I used to be able to go 5, 6, 7 hours writing at a time. It wasn't a problem. And now, because my brain became so conditioned to online distraction, I'd be lucky while sitting at the keyboard if I could go 15 minutes without all of a sudden getting interrupted, thinking, oh, I should check email. I should check sports. I should check news, whatever. So that's what happened to me. That's my why. And it just so ticked me off. And then the more I looked into it, I realized I'm not alone. So that's why I go around talking about it.
So one of the phrases that you've used now, twice in the course of the last 10 minutes, and we're not even 10 minutes in, but was conditioned for distraction, that your brain was conditioned into this. A lot of people say, you know, kids have their tablets all the time now. Is it that it's conditioned, or is it just our culture is set up in a format where it's distracting? Is this something that we're all dealing with, or have we conditioned ourselves to be dealing with it?
We're all dealing with it. It's distraction has become our default mode. And what's okay, now I'm going to start getting technical, and I'm not a big science person, is that there's in our brains, we got this chemical called dopamine. It's the feel-good chemical. And every time we feel good about something, we get a little dopamine spike. And that's, you start looking into it in the internet, talking about social media, talking about video games, talking about websites. They realized how to get us, I hate to say hooked because people don't like to hear addicted. You might want to say manipulated, but how to keep our eyes on the screen. By they knew about every time, like you check like Facebook, for example, or Meta, whatever you want to call it. What they did, they actually studied slot machines in Las Vegas. And what was it that made sound-minded people want to sit in a room without windows for hours at a time pulling a slot, pulling a lever, or now pushing a button, and they realized it was a random reward. And every time you got that random reward, all of a sudden you got a little spike of dopamine, you know, the anticipation, the excitement, and all of a sudden you might get a little win and more dopamine was released. And so what Facebook did, they added the like button. Anyone who's on Facebook or Instagram, you know how exciting, how good you feel when you get a like, you get a share. It feels good. That's because you're getting dopamine. And so that's what the internet has done, because they realized the only way they're making money is by us staying on our screens as long as possible. So they understood how to play upon our vulnerabilities, if you will, and to get us keep on clicking. And often that's because of dopamine.
Now, it's interesting because, you know, as a comedian, you're now dealing, or it would seem to me that the dopamine, you're against it and you're for it, because the whole reason why we love comedians and your line of work is because of that feel good, the dopamine, and probably not just for the performer kind of being on stage and seeing people light up, but the way that the audience feels when they're laughing and they're thinking about the enticing and funny things that have just happened. And we look at this dopamine then as the good and the bad, because we have this digital distraction, this dopamine that we're getting online. Do you find, or have you found, that it makes it more difficult for dopamine in real life, or for real life to cause that same sense of excitement for people?
I don't know. I haven't seen that, you know, as far as being live on stage, if it's affecting people or not. I haven't noticed that.
You know, it's really interesting, because when we talk about dopamine, and I love the manipulation aspect of it. And as you were discussing this topic, I thought about clickbait and the first time I'd ever heard that term used and didn't understand it until I realized, like, I've now clicked through a link to find out what it was, and it's garbage on the other side. There wasn't anything there, but, you know, it was flashy and it had a cool title and there was no substance to it. And in a lot of ways, I think social media and a lot of formats, you know, it's how multiple generations are getting news and information and are distracted by it daily. Did you see X, Y, and Z on Facebook or on Meta? Is how so many conversations start at this point in time. So Jeff, I mean, are you and I gonna sit here and just talk about a problem, or do you think we're gonna talk a little bit about a solution?
Well, we're gonna be talking about solutions, or, you know, what makes it so difficult is that technology just changes so fast now. And so for us to keep pace or businesses to keep pace, it's so difficult. So if anything, try to build some awareness. And awareness allows at least you can make a decision rather than being in a default mode of just automatically just picking up our phones and just being distracted.
I love that. I love that concept that we can choose to continue with the current way in which life is moving, or that we can consciously make an effort to change how we are engaging and interacting with each other. For those of you and our listeners who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Jeff Woser, writer, comedian, and speaker. And today we're discussing digital distraction. You know, Jeff, you just mentioned kind of that need or desire to stay up to date with information, that it's coming at us so quickly. Is there a way, I mean, right now, culturally, the expectation for response time and knowledge of current events, is there a way that we can still live in society and engage in society without dealing with some of these digital distraction questions?
As in, you're talking from a work standpoint or social standpoint or everything in general?
Let's talk about everything in general, because I feel like now, you know, you and I are recording this virtually. We're not in the same room, but the first time we met, we started out with kind of general discussions, with general world discussions. And I find lately that that's how a lot of meetings start, is with a general discussion of, oh, did you see this? Or they're in the middle of the meeting and the screen will flash with, oh, this just happened. It just popped up on my feed. With the pandemic, with the virtual nature of how so many of us are engaging now, are we culturally just expected to be up to date about all things from a personal perspective and from a business perspective?
Yes. It's interesting what you said. I mean, because I think of that with, you know, my own family, my own friends. And like you said, so many conversations now, oh, you got to see this video, you got to see that video. And, you know, I think of my mom, who's 93, and she's got a smartphone, and she's, you know, she's somewhat digitally connected, but there's so many things she cannot do. You know, if she wants to make to order food online or to make a reservation, everything's got to be, you know, everything's digital. And so you almost cannot function in society without it. But again, it's trying to find that. Kel Newport, who's a writer, wrote Digital Minimalism and Life Without Email. But he always says, you know, we got to define our own boundaries. You know, it's we're not talking about, and I just want to clarify, I'm not anti-tech at all. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, I think our devices are amazing, but that's the problem. They're too amazing. But that's where we've got to come a conclusion for ourselves, define the boundary. What is what's too much? What's not enough? And that's what we all have to come to that conclusion with.
It's interesting. And, you know, to comment on what you just mentioned about your mom and then downloading menus, ordering food. I mean, there's a lot of places now, and specifically during the pandemic, who have gotten rid of real menus. Instead, you have a code and you scan the code on your phone and the menu will pop up on your phone, and you'll then tell the server what you're ordering. And in my mind, I'm like, well, what if you don't have a cell phone? And my partner looked at me and said, what do you mean if you don't have a cell phone? Like, who is out in society right now without a cell phone and the ability to do this? But I think that points even more towards what you're talking about, is that line between the two. In society right now, we're at a place, oh, you want to go out to eat? Well, you need a cell phone, because otherwise you won't know what's on the menu. Not even beforehand, but when you get there, that there's that expectation. So it's an interesting balancing act, Jeff. And I'm looking forward to us discussing possible ways in which we can shift our behavior so that not affecting us as much as it currently is, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. But it's, you know, we can't just put our heads in the sand. You know, technology is going to get more and more intrusive, especially with the onset of AI, artificial intelligence, and the stuff that's happening right now. It's just shocking. And so we've got to figure out how to live with it. But again, finding that balance. Finally, what is too much? And that's what the key is. And that's what comes with awareness.
And that balance is what I want to talk about, but we're going to do it right after this break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Verrill. And today our guest is Jeff Woser, writer, comedian, and speaker. And today we're discussing digital distraction. You know, Jeff, it sounds awkward, but I say it a lot. So before you came on the show, I, of course, Googled you and I stalked you and I watched a bunch of other things that you'd put online. And you have this great saying in one of your videos, and it's, you know, we have the same number of hours that Einstein had and that Michelangelo had. And that really spoke to me. And I know it's silly, and a lot of people are thinking, Tawny, you're an educated person. You're telling me this is the first time that you realize that. And I have to be honest and say, yeah, I never made that comparator, that same number of hours in the day that Michelangelo was working with and that Einstein was working with. But why does it feel like I accomplish so much less? And I love the way that you communicated that. And why is it? Why, Jeff, do I feel like, well, I'm never going to be an Einstein or a Michelangelo. My stick figures don't compare, and nobody lets me near any contraptions. But why, Jeff? Why am I never going to be Einstein or Michelangelo?
Well, I think that's the great big irony right now, is that our electronic devices were originally created to save us time. Now they're created to steal our time. And that's, you know, everyone I talk to and going to my presentations, you know, I'll talk to people, and I have yet to meet anyone who said they want to spend more time on their devices. It's always less. And I think from my own personal experience, I will come into the house, like say I'm outside doing what? You know, chopping wood or cutting lawn. It's like, I'm just going to come in for 2 minutes, you know, maybe get a glass of water. automatically, what do? I jump online. And then all of a sudden, and I had no intention. It's like, oh, maybe I'll check email or something. But we all delude ourselves. It's going to be a quick check. But what happens when you say, oh, I'm going to check email? You might have to respond to that email. Someone might send you a video. Then you're watching the video. Or someone might send you a link. And the next thing you know, you're down the rabbit hole. You're web surfing. And I have this, I talk about this in one of my videos. I talk about it in my speech. I had this one classic time. I went online to check my bank's Saturday morning hours. Should have been 30 seconds, maybe a minute most. 55 minutes later, I caught myself reading about the bathing habits of South American howler monkeys. How I got there, I had no idea. And by the time I figured this out, the bank had closed. But this is, to get to your point, this is what's happening. We're spending more and more time on our devices. And I know sometimes I'll bring this up presentations. Like every time you go on, you might spend an extra 20 minutes. And I've had some people say, well, what's 20 minutes? But you add that up over the, so you do that three times a day, that's 1 hour. You do that every day over a week, that's 7 hours. Every day during a month, it's 28 hours, the equivalent almost of two entire waking hour days that we're just wasting on web surfing, just mindless scrolling. And so that's why it seems like we don't have as much time anymore.
It's so interesting because I love the way that you add the time together. And I know that sounds silly, simple addition, you're not doing calculus, but you added the time together. And when you clump it up like that, those 20 minutes really do mean a lot. They really are problematic. And one of your videos, you talk about, you know, there's 1440 minutes in each day. And I haven't checked your math on that. I believe you. I'm sure that one's scientifically proven. But really what I struggle with is this just something that we're dealing with here in the United States, or is it something that the whole world deals with? Where is this coming from?
It's not restricted to the United States. It's universal. It's everywhere, and the planet is suffering this. I mean, we've seen, with some of the countries in Europe, we're threatening to sue Facebook or Google just for some of their practices, but we're starting to see in Europe, they're kind of jumping ahead of us here. In 2017, France enacted a policy which made companies with more than 50 or more employees restricted when bosses could contact their employees outside of work. And then we just saw this past week, last week, Belgium did the same, where they passed a policy for their federal civil servants, where they gave them the right to disconnect off hours. Portugal's enacted something similar to that. In 2012, the Volkswagen in Germany, they imposed a restriction when workers could be emailed outside of work. So they're trying to get ahead of the game, and they're doing this for, they said, especially in Belgium, they just mentioned this last week, because they're trying to avoid employee burnout, because they're seeing that. Because what happens with our devices nowadays is that we're taking our work home with us. Because our devices are mobile, our computers, our phones, we're taking our work home with us. And so we never have a chance to reboot, which I think is ironic because we understand the power of rebooting our computers, but we don't let our minds reboot. And in the United States, 65% of people still check their work emails while on vacation. So we're just constantly online, and it's causing burnout, and it's causing productivity problems. And I mean, imagine, say like email, because I know so many people, some of my friends, they're always, checking work emails during the weekend. Just imagine when you come in on work to Monday and you see a line of 78 people. Imagine you have 78 emails in your work, in your inbox.
Imagine I don't have to imagine it, Jeff. I don't have to imagine it. But yeah, no, I will right now. But if you can hear my heart palpitating, that's why.
Well, exactly. So if you imagine that 78 people waiting outside your office, how daunting, or 112, how daunting that is. And so that kind of, that promotes a lot of people to get online during the weekend. It's like, oh my gosh, I got to cut this down. And the irony of that, we're always, you know, checking our emails, so it's all got to cut it down, is the, Chuck Klosterman, a writer from New York Times, he had that great line saying our emails are like zombies. No matter how many you kill off, they just keep on coming back. And so that's what's so frustrating about it.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, because, you know, as we're having this discussion, I've turned my email off because otherwise I know that, you know, my eyes will move and I'll see a topic and I'll think, oh, my gosh, I have to get back to them right away. And that's an emergency. But we have more and more times where we need to be focused. You and I need to be engaged right now, having this discussion, really kind of digging into it. But our minds are conditioned for distraction. And is it because we both have some business background, or is this all occupations where we're seeing it? We're seeing it in blue collar, we're seeing it in white collar, we're seeing it in the service industry. And not just that, but if we're not using a computer as part of our job, do we need to have that digital detox and step away from electronics? Or would it be okay for us to use Facebook as that detox?
Well, to get to your first point, email, it has no preference. It bothers everyone. It doesn't matter what your job, what your title, if you're a student or if you're, you know, a cafeteria worker, it does not matter. It's always going to distract us. Professor Gloria Marek out of the University of California, Irvine, she said in her studies, an average worker during an 8-hour workday checks her email 77 times per day. And I know you and I have talked about this and you said, wow, that's low for a lot of people. But the key is, what she found, once we are distracted, it takes us 23 and a half minutes to regain full focus. So just think of that. If you're checking your email that much and how difficult it is to regain that focus, it's almost impossible. But what's equally disturbing about this is that the Air Force Academy did a study, put three different groups in three different rooms. One group had computers with no access. Another group had computers with access, and another group had no computers. They were all taught the same lesson. And then after, they were tested how well they retained that information. And no surprise, the group without the computers scored the highest. But what was really shocking was the group that had computers without access scored just as poorly as the group that had computers with access. So our devices don't even have to be on to be distracting us. They're almost like secondhand smoke, like ambient pollution, where they're affecting us even when they're not on. And you see this when you know, I'm sure you've seen it, or anyone who's listening, when you have a conversation at the dinner table, you know, you're out at dinner and people have their phones there. They're not fully engaged with the conversation with you. They're kind of looking at you, and every now and then they're looking down at their phone. And so it affects everyone.
It's interesting because this leads to my, you kind of led into this next question, and it was very organic. And it's, you know, okay, so there's our problem. So how do we work to minimize that impact? And my first question, is it something that we legislate? And as a hypothetical, I mean, if we could shut off the internet at a certain time each day, would that work? But it sounds like, based off of that study, that turning off the internet isn't going to solve it. Is that right?
Pretty much. I mean, because even there's another, support that, there's a security firm out of Germany, the Kaspersky Lab, and they did a study with four different scenarios. A cell phone on their desk, cell phone in a drawer, cell phone in a pocket, cell phone outside of the room. The farther away the phone, the better their scores. The test subjects were given a lesson and then see how well they retained the information. 26% difference from when the phone was in front of them from the phone was out of the room. So, but obviously we're in a distraction-based economy. You know, the sad thing is, Tristan Harris, who did the great movie Social Dilemma, he said that, you know, we're more profitable distracted. That's how the economy is working now. So there's no way we could shut it off. So again, that's, I think, from a personal standpoint or even from a business standpoint, you've got to somehow decide, can we afford to turn off the internet at a certain time or for a few hours. I know there's some companies, there's a company, Expedia, where what they do is they actually have the creatives, the people have to do the deep thinking. They are free from checking emails. They, they could go 2-3 days without being disturbed, and they have other departments handling that. So we could get some creative done, that, the deep thinking that needs to be done without distractions. From an individual standpoint, though, that's something you have to decide. Like you said, you're just getting bombarded with emails. Can you afford not to? And, a lot of people say, well, maybe have a digital, 1 day of digital detox. I don't know if that's going to work. It's almost like, being on a diet and say, okay, I'm going to go 1 day without, a milkshake or something. And it, I just don't think that's going to work.
For our listeners who know me on a personal level, they'll laugh and say, like, if you ever asked Tani to detox on ice cream, we all know that's not going to work. And it sounds like technology may be the same for me and for likely for others. And that leads to my next question, which is, okay, I am a big believer in autonomy, that in order to change, we have to take control of our own destiny. We have to acknowledge that there's a problem in order to change. But in your opinion, sorry, we're going to get super personal, Jeff.
Okay.
Whose responsibility is it? I mean, is this the schools? Is it a family cultural aspect? Is it employers? But who is responsible for taking over, reining in this issue? Where do we start? It's such a massive issue that the question of where do we start, I think, to me becomes difficult.
Extremely difficult. Talking with parents that are trying to get their kids to cut back, on their screen use. And the parents say it's so frustrating because the kids go to school and the schools are pushing the iPads, are pushing the tablets onto the kids. So so you don't even have that option anymore. So I don't know. That's a tough subject on that, because I cannot see, although we're seeing European governments pass legislation, and I have yet to hear anything negative about that. People really protesting that, but I don't know where we're going to. I just can't imagine the tech industry supporting that.
And it's, and so in my mind, the whole time we've been having this discussion, I keep going back in my head to a conversation I had with my 10-year-old last night. And every night we take 1 hour and we read together. So after homework's done, we sit down and we read. And the book that I had just finished was called Why Fish Don't Exist. And suddenly, for some reason, she started talking about fish, whether she saw the title of the book or something like that. And I said, no, there's no such thing as fish. Fish are not a thing. It's a category. It's a misplaced category. There's mammals, but fish itself is not a category. And she started arguing with me about it. No, stop. You don't know what you're talking about. And what my instinct was to be like, no, look, get my phone and prove to her that I was right, using this as my backup. And it goes directly against what we're talking about. We just spent this wonderful hour together without the devices. And I immediately then turned to this device to support my proposition that the fact that I've just shared with her is correct. And I agree with you, Jeff, that I have to then make the choice as a parent to have my child thinking, you're crazy, mom, which she already thinks, or sure, prove to her digitally that I'm right.
When I'm with my 11-year-old nephew, when I'm with him, and same thing, you have a conversation. Oh, Siri, what's this? Siri, what's that? And everything is right there. And I'm not denying it. But again, it just compounds it. It's like, man, you almost seem like a hypocrite, where we're trying to tell our kids or whatever to stay off their devices, and yet we all do it. But I it's interesting, because from the kids' standpoint, what they're finding is, these kids don't have to think anything out. They don't have to learn how to spell. They don't learn math. They don't have to think of anything, because all the answers are given to them. And yet what recruiters are saying, once these kids get out of college, they don't know how to apply anything to firsthand experiences, to adulthood. So,
and I want to jump in. I want to jump into that fact right after our break. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBRadio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Jeff Woser, writer, comedian, and speaker. And today we're discussing digital distractions. For those of you who have spent the whole episode with us, you've heard us kind of talk about the issue itself. We've talked a lot about the problem. Jeff, I want to spend the next 15 minutes though talking about solutions. And the first thing I want to ask is, and the good news is I know that you have resources here because I told you I Google stalked you, my digital distraction.
Irony.
It really is. What can employers do, though, to help to minimize the digital distraction? You talked about one organization that, you know, for their ad team, that they took away the responsibility for email. But what are some things that you found that could work for an employer to do to help to stop or to minimize some of this digital drain?
First, I just want to say, you know, with the employers, and what I'm about to say, I understand how difficult it is today, because earlier I mentioned about it's so difficult for businesses to maintain, keep pace with the changing technology. You know, you think of some things, you know, within 2-3 years, it's already obsolete. So it's difficult from inside an office. But I think one of the best things is for people in a business is to manage the response parameters up front. You know, maybe when or when you can or cannot be reached with, because I know a lot of that's a big question I often get at the end of my presentations. People always tell me, it's like, you know, I'm trying to get work done, but if I don't respond to my texts or I don't respond to my emails, all of a sudden I'm viewed as a problem employee. And then, but work is not getting done. So I think that's something that for businesses have to establish upfront, if it's okay, or there's a designated time, maybe from, you know, 10 o'clock to noon, that, you know, certain employees or certain departments can go without responding to emails or text. So I think that is one of the, you know, they've got to decide what works best in their office.
Another thing that you have mentioned in the past as well, and I think setting expectations is so important, but one thing that people struggle with the concept of setting expectations is identifying that there's a problem. And you've talked a lot about time audits. Tell me about what that would look like. Is that something that an employer could help employees perform?
Exactly. There's a lot of software online that allows you to monitor, you know, what you're focusing on, what, you know, while you're online. And, you know, just use the example, say if you want to lose weight and it's, you know, it's great to have, you know, you want to weigh yourself so you can measure, you have something, a milepost to go after. It's easier to go after that goal. And it's kind of the same thing as a time audit. When I did that for myself and I found out how much time I'm spending on, you know, social media, it's like, okay, now I had a target. Now I could realize where I could actually gauge. You know, you start thinking about the average person, not me, but the average person spends 2 hours, 22 minutes per day on social media. And if you know how much time you're spending and you think, wow, that's taking away from family, that's taking away from my job, it's going to be easier to make some changes, you know, maybe cutting back. You could still stay in Facebook, but maybe cutting back to 30 minutes a day or an hour a day. So it's not compromising other parts of your life. So that's when you talk about a time audit, the importance of that.
In my situation, I'm thinking that those 2 hours and 20 minutes on social media, if I put that towards art, I could, in fact, become Michelangelo, you know, at some point soon. So sure. When you see me hanging from when you see me lying on my back on top of a ceiling, kind of, you'll know that that's because I've put my non-social media time to good use. Way off track, but that's what I'm going to do when I'm no longer creating content or assisting in creating distractions online.
You know, along that, when you're saying, you know, what can you do in an office, you know, say if you own a company or you're the manager or something, maybe try some things at home and see what a difference it makes. Like one of the biggest things I always recommend, first thing for individuals, if you're going to do anything, is get your phone out of the bedroom as using as alarm clock. Because what happens is as soon as you wake up, you pick up your phone, and next thing you know, you're checking email, you're checking text, you're checking news. 30 seconds into your day, you're being reactive rather than proactive. My sister tried this. She says it saves her 45 minutes per day since she just went back to an old-fashioned alarm clock. Because, you know, when you're trying to break a habit, it's the cue. And the cue with our phones is once it's in our hand, that sets it off. And so I was stunned when my sister said it saved her that much time. But all of a sudden she has time. You know, she's not going to work helter skelter. But what I guess I'm saying is if you're a business manager, maybe try something like that. See how it benefits you and then see if you can incorporate that into your business culture.
Too, because you've mentioned, and this is something I think we all hear very often. Oh, when I was in the shower, I finally realized how we are going to fix this. Or I went for a walk last night, and during the walk, I realized that this is going to be the best way for us to fix this solution. And the interesting part about that, and you mentioned this in a bunch of your presentations, is that's the answer. These are, why in the shower are you doing such great thinking? Well, you're not connected to a device. You know, you have one job that you're doing in there and your mind has the space in order to focus, I guess would be the best way to describe it, correct?
That is correct. I think that's a great example. And, you know, because everyone always says it, oh, I do my best thinking in the shower. And, you know, it's almost, people say it so much, it almost sounds like a cliche, but it's true. And the reason why is because you're disconnected. And that alone should be a reason enough for people to realize, wow, I'm better when I'm focused. I'm better when I'm present. I'm better when I'm in the moment. And same thing with walks. I know you mentioned, alluded to one of my videos. I mean, some of the most creative minds, Steve Jobs, he would always go for walks, and it wasn't for exercise. It was to get away from all the distractions and kind of think to himself. Beethoven did the same thing.
So you are a big, big believer in nature. You are an outdoors man, and you know, nature is a big part of who you are from what you're putting out there on social media and online. For guests and for listeners who unfortunately don't have as easy access to the beauty of the outdoors and rivers and trees and mountains, what can they do to disconnect if they want to be moving outdoors? Is it just engaging in the outdoors, or does it involve kind of being away from other people and in a more serene environment?
No, it just unplug, just get off your phone. And one of the biggest misnomers, you know, when people think, oh, outdoors, I've got, you know, you got to be named Sven and you got to be, you know, and you got to live.
Or up have a reindeer named Sven. You have to, one or the other. You either need the reindeer or you need to be named Sven. So that's the only way to enjoy it, at least up here in Maine where it's so cold.
Exactly. But with the misnomer, though, with a lot of people, is like, one, just have this. It only takes 30 minutes to get just the mental health benefits of being of the outdoors. And you don't have to have skis on your feet. You don't have to be hanging from a rope and off a cliff. Of just getting, you could do it in a park. You could even do it in your backyard without your device. I mean, the studies show a mere 30-minute outdoor setting reduces blood pressure, lowers the heart rate, and builds your immune system. And what a lot of people also, they have this misnomer where they think, you know, nature or the calming effect of nature only comes in massively big vistas. You know, they got to go up to, you know, New Hampshire and see Mount Washington. They have to see it in an ocean, when it actually, you could find it just in your backyard. You could find a nearby park, but it just, you know, a matter of disconnecting from your phone and being observing, being present. And I don't have, obviously, one of my presentations, but I show the slide of this. There was a trail near my home in Colorado, and it was just, it's a pretty middle of the road trail for Colorado standards. And there's this white wildflower I passed hundreds of times, and then I never looked at it. And one day I stopped to look at it. It was called a mariposa, and it's absolutely stunning. The design, the colors, and everything. And it just so opened my mind. I was like, oh my gosh, what are we missing? You know, again, because we have the misnomer, everything, you know, it's got to be a mountain vista. And it also comes in small sizes where we could see like a flower like that, or, you know, a bird, or hear just the sound of a bird, you know, in our backyards or in a park. And I'm not trying to get all, you know, hippy dippy here, like I should be, you know, listening to Stevie Nicks CDs and dressed in lavender. But I'm just saying, just the power of just being in the moment, and you could do with it. And when people realize they could experience this anywhere, it makes the outdoors a lot more accessible for them. You could do it during a lunch break, you know, before work, after work, just, you know, again, just to reboot the brain.
And as our listeners are trying to think of the last Stevie Nicks song they heard, this is a good time for us to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, in the HR community. We are honored and thank our sponsoring law firms of Verrill, Sheehan Finney, Jackson Lewis, and McLean Middleton. Our partner sponsors of Healthcare Purchase Alliance and Strategic HR. Want to be a sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say, we want to be an HR Power Hour sponsor.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Jeff Woser, writer, comedian, and speaker. And today we're discussing digital distractions. And you might think to yourself, well, you just stumbled over that word, Tawny. So digital distractions may be hitting you right now, but I promise you they're not. You have 100% my full attention. But you know, something you mentioned earlier today, Jeff, that I have been distracted by and thinking about is, we live in an age where AI is taking over a lot of the things that we do. And you mentioned it previously, but how does AI play a role in where we find ourselves right now and how we move forward?
Well, I talking misnomers, most people, you mention AI, they think, oh, you know, it's going to be affecting the blue collar jobs. And it is not. I mean, you being the legal profession, I'm sure you may have seen it, where it is going for the AI, where it's going right now is the legal profession, the medical profession. So it's pretty much going after everyone. And I hate to say going after, I don't mean to sound like so negative.
No, it's our big competitor. No, I 100% agree. I mean, as soon as it has more empathy, then I'm really going to be in trouble, but I still get my empathy to keep me on top.
It's interesting you say that. I'm just reading this wonderful book right now. They mentioned that's the biggest thing going for humans is to have empathy, because that's the one thing that computers can't do. So we got to, touch upon our humanity, and empathy is that. But with the, it's interesting with the medical field, there's algorithms in China, algorithms in the United States, where they could detect forms of various forms of cancer at a higher rate and much quicker than like a team of 15, you know, top surgeons. And I mean, and it's going into the music business where there's a company where they can produce songs in just seconds. So they're putting session players out of work. And the one that just stuns me is their art galleries now actually showing, exhibiting the artwork of computers. And that one bothers me because I'll show this in my presentations and there's this picture out and, you know, I'll ask anyone who, does anyone know who the painting's from? And they all say Monet. It looks very, you know, something from the, you know, Impressionism. And it's like, no, this was produced by a computer in a matter of seconds, just based by some tech expert who put in the algorithms, things that he thought would make a great painting. And that kind of bothers me, that one.
That one is scary. That one scares me as well.
If you've ever been to an art, you know, an art exhibit, if you ever stood in front of Van Gogh, and the power of it's not just visually, but it's knowing the story, knowing the, you know, his story, knowing the turmoil, knowing the sweat that went into that. And that bothers me when you see that taken away, you know, in artwork. So it's coming. It's coming everywhere. So people, they can't just think, oh, it's just a blue collar thing. It's something at the factories. And that is coming very, very fast. So I don't know if that's to scare anyone, but we've all got to be prepared for this.
No, I mean, it's interesting too, because it really is such a tough balance. And usually, I mean, for our listeners, you're all in HR and we talk so much about work-life balance, but understanding this technology balance is similarly just as important, because we rely upon technology, but one of the aspects, you know, of a lot of our jobs is to understand how the technology works, because so often it can be riddled with discrimination. It can have flaws in it more generally that are just further exacerbating issues that we're currently experiencing. And I think that's where we see the intersection between, Jeff, what you and I are talking about, and what human resource professionals deal with on a daily basis is the importance of that balance and how difficult it is for businesses to find it. We need people to be using technology in order to effectively and efficiently be doing their job, but not too much so.
What, well, you said, human resources, don't forget that name, human resources. You got to bring that human aspect into the work, you know, the direct one-on-one contact, you know, communicating with people. So I think that's, you know, part of the balance thing right there.
No, I agree. And you know what, Jeff, if you and I had been able to completely solve this problem in an hour, we probably wouldn't be on the radio talking about it. But I have enjoyed having this conversation with you, learning more about the problem and us having a discussion about possible solutions. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Tani. I enjoyed it as well.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.